Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway, Mining Indaba 2024 special. We're coming to you live and direct from South Africa, from Cape Town, home of Indaba. Well, one of us is anyway. Kev's sat there looking at me now, smiling with the sun on his face. So what are your first thoughts on Mining Indaba 2024 compared to last year? And now you're showing me the sea, now you are showing off. So what are you finding? How has it been down there since you got down there on Sunday evening?
There's more people here. It's definitely busier than it was last year.
Yeah.
So I have to say,
I think that was a hangover from COVID, maybe the fact that people were starting to get back out into things. You know what I mean? There was a bit of reticence, maybe, to be in large places.
Well, possibly. But I mean, there is huge numbers of people here. Literally, Cape Town is full. Can't get a room to stay in even. There was a few stories from the taxi driver that one group of guys, miners, I think they were from Zambia, actually, and they had. They'd come down to do Indaba. They'd booked online to how to pay, and it turned out that they were scammed. The Nigerian people had reposted the house, and subsequently the money was redirected into the Nigerian's bank account. So they couldn't get a place. So the like Premier Inn type thing down here was £800 a night. And I mean, you know, South Africa's not that expensive anyway. So, like, unbelievable how many people are here is good. There's a bit more of a buzz. Like, everybody, from what I've been talking to, is looking for projects. You know, there's finance about. There was a lot more investors about. That was when I booked in as press. They were basically telling me how many investor passes were going out. There was a lot. You know, I was speaking with the Ethereum guy who's looking into that investment side of things, and there was over 2,000 to 2,500 people who'd applied for the investors passes. He obviously was narrowing it down to speak to people about Ethereum. So yeah, it's just a bit more of a buzz than there was last year. I can't say it's like twice the amount, but it's bigger. You know, it's bigger.
Yeah. Well, you can gauge that straight away, so that's good. Okay. Well, I mean, you've obviously had a few meetings this week, and I think the first one that I remember you mentioning was that you caught up with Jason Brewer from multiple companies, but obviously initially you talked about Unicorn and you also talked about Marula Mining as well. Should we have a listen to what he had to say?
Yeah, I think we talked about all his companies, to be honest. I think there was a chat about Neo as well, and so have a listen.
So here we are at Indaba in beautiful Cape Town. I'm here with Jason Brewer. So Jason, tell us what's been happening other than you're very, very stressed because you've been trying to do many deals.
Yeah, it's been a busy first few days down here at the Mining Indaba, and here obviously representing all the companies. So Marua Mining, Neo Energy, Super Minerals, and Unicorn. Pushing ahead on all fronts. Marula primarily to finalise the offtake arrangements and the involvement of Q Global Quality moving forward, which is critical in terms of giving us that certainty of funding and taking the Besberg Lithium mine to a different level for a much longer term offtake arrangement with the major European trading. So very excited about what's happening there at Marula over this quarter. With Neo Energy Metals, it's a great chance to meet up with the other key stakeholders here in Kektown. Work is now commencing across a number of facets of our business. The drilling contract being let, the metallurgical and mining studies, which need to be updated. Also, contractors coming in to do that. And again, working with the team at Q Global Quantities in terms of getting new mining equipment up there ready for basically by the end of this year, making a development decision. So,
just give people an idea of what about NEO. There's not a lot of people know about it, so just tell us where it is, what the asset is.
Yeah, NEO, we've secured the majority interest in what's called the Henkridge Uranium Project. It's located in the Northern Cape. It was a project which Anglo-American took all the way through the feasibility study, a positive feasibility study at a time when uranium prices were a fraction of where we're at now.
Yeah, $106 a pound.
So the study work there came back very positive. It's got proven resources, JORC compliant resources. You've got mineralization which extends from surface down for the first 8 to 15 meters. So it's shallow, it's sandposted, so arguably one of the lowest cost mining, uranium mining operations in the world. And the uranium mineralization, which extends across the full license area, and we've only focused on the first, 5 to 10%. So great upside in terms of increasing the resources. But a project which we can take to a development decision within 12 months, and where that positive feasibility study just needs to be upgraded. You know, it needs to be updated to reflect the current prices, which are at 16-17 year highs. And where previously the cost profile of this had been estimated between $22 and $25 a pound. So if uranium price is in excess of $100, you've got a great opportunity there to make this a significant return. And let's be honest, this is really the only London listed advanced uranium project. Not a uranium fund like Yellowcake, but we are a company that will be developing that uranium project into a mine over the next 12 months.
I think investors need to understand that over the last probably 10, 15, 20 years, the majors have spent fortunes on many, many projects that they've dropped. And this is where the small cap miners, if you like, come in and say, well, now that is feasible, so we'll do it. But the majors don't tend to go back to that. Is that where you find it?
Absolutely. Look, this, the Henkridge project has had over 30 million US spent on it by Anglo-American. So you can imagine the quality of work which they did. They did over 80 test mining pits. They had a pilot plant which was doing recoveries, very good, strong recoveries, and operated consistently over a 90-day period, and demonstrated what recoveries, what ability it was to recover that uranium. So there are lots of projects, not just Henkridge, it's just one example. A lot of projects here in South Africa, in Africa, where there has been a tremendous amount of money which has been expended, but for reasons, you know, which were more aligned to their corporate strategy, they didn't progress. We now have an opportunity as a junior mining company, managing a series of junior mining companies, to come in and pick up projects that can be brought into development very quickly and have such quality work behind support.
Just give us a bit of an overview of what's been happening with Unicorn. Obviously, you took over a role there late last year. What's been happening?
Look, Unicorn, it's a great opportunity there. It's a company that's on the standard list. It's got a very tight capital structure and clearly focused on base metals out of Ireland. I've had many discussions with the board, the chairman, our technical director as well, and they're aware that clearly my focus is on building a position here in Africa. They support that wholeheartedly, and we've been already going through and reviewing a number of very, very robust, very attractive projects here in Central Africa and Southern Africa, and ones which are still aligned to that base metal strategy, but ones which are much more advanced in terms that they can, again, be brought into development within a 6 to 12 month period. And we can accelerate that even further, then I think the Unicorn becomes a very attractive company. We have supporters that are waiting for us to fund those activities, long-term strategic players that will get involved and support us as we secure those project interests and to develop, and with funding that's long-term. And I think that's critical in today's market. It's money that comes in and goes out. This is long-term money, strategic, and ones where they want to see a return, not just with one project, but with a series of projects operating in these regions.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you can make Unicorn a better resource, it's a revenue play within 12 months, just the same as you've done with Varilla, then it's going to obviously respond similarly, I think, you know. And as you say, the beauty about the Unicorn Mineral Resources is the structure, the share structure is really, really tight. There is not a huge number of shares about it. So that should help. So tell us a little bit more about Shuka.
Yeah, no, that's, you've got it right there. Look, Shuka's one which we've been spending a lot of time finalising the due diligence and documentation for an asset which we're now looking to acquire. Obviously, it's listed on AIM, so we've had to work very closely with our nomad there, Strand Hanson, and they've been very supportive, very thorough, and I think shareholders should take note about how thorough they have been. The nature of that project is that it won't trigger a reverse takeover, it means we will continue to trade, which again is something very significant. Nobody wants to see a company suspended just to go through an acquisition. So similar to like Marula, where we've done over a dozen acquisitions in the past 4 months, this one, I think, with Shuka will be very well received. It's a project which historically has been producing, one where I believe there is the potential to grow that asset and the business that you could grow very quickly over 2020. So it seems, based on history of Arula, all these other companies that you're now doing deals with, that you really are a deal maker. This is what you like to do.
Look, I like to do deals, not deals for the sake of it. I want to get deals which actually add value. And I think one thing we've demonstrated at Arula, we've done deals. Equity's been issued along the way, but each and every time we've done those deals, you've seen the market react in a positive way. So each acquisition, each transaction has been value accretive. So shareholders actually see that whilst more shares have been issued, the share price is going up. So they are getting that capital growth return on their investment. So no, there's deals to be done. And you don't do deals sitting behind a desk in West London or in the City of London. You actually do deals by being on the ground. I think one of the great things I have is I'm here. Yeah, I'm not just here in Cape Town. I was in Tanzania last week, drove several hours to go and do some operations there. You know, the following week, I think Kenya, we drove all the way to the coast, 9 hours, to look at a small producing mine there. Getting out and doing deals, which actually add value. You know, getting out and doing deals where you've got no corporate advisors, no middlemen. You know, the actual cost to do those deals are true costs. There's no fat added to it.
Yes.
You know, so shareholders are getting a great deal. Look, we've got a great network, not just in East Africa, where I live now, that's my home, but in Southern Africa in particular, in Central Africa. We've got a great network of people that want to work with us, want to introduce us to projects, and want us to be seen to be doing deals. So we'll keep pushing ahead. I'll keep pushing ahead with the team. The team's very good, very capable across the system. So, no, for us to do a deal, there's been a lot of work that would have gone into it to get us to that point.
Yeah, and you have taken a very interesting way of getting these projects and bypassing a huge amount of the cost because of the capital structure a company doesn't require it. So the likes of the pre-feasibility study before you stick the spade in the ground, if you like, and dig the stuff up. No, you're going straight to dig it up. And this is obviously very valuable. Do you see that this could cause you any issues, or you really just think, no, this is really the way that we need to do things?
What people need to recognize is whilst we may not produce pre-feasibility study or a feasibility study or similar reports like that, the work is being done. It's just that we don't need to present a feasibility study to financial institutions to secure the funding. We've got good long-term partners, Q Global Commodities is a perfect example, that will come in and support us and have all those capabilities to sign off on mining studies, processing, drilling. You know, at Blesberg, yes, we started operating there very quickly, but in parallel with that, we completed a 1.75 million exploration program, drilling, trenching. So that work gets done. You know, we do the work, we understand the risks. But again, just because we haven't put out an announcement with results at DFS doesn't mean we're a bunch of cowboys. You know, we're actually doing the work, and we've got people on the ground doing the work, very capable people. The mining studies at Blesberg, we've got a mining team that's working with Q Global Commodities that operate 12 coal mines, open pit mines in the region. They know how much it costs to move a ton of material to haul it here and this on. Processing-wise, we're working with some of the best consultants in Southern Africa there. I think we've proved that with the XRF ore sorter, using the AI algorithms and so on. That's a world first. Dry sorting, achieving recoveries up to 89%. So we do the work. It's just we do it in an accelerated way, and we don't have to then go through a very long, drawn-out feasibility kind of process and due diligence process with financial institutions to back us. We have secured that funding.
Yeah, and the vast majority of these projects are brownfield sites. Stuff has happened before. You're coming in, it's with all the information here, saying, right, we can make this financially accretive to the company.
Absolutely. Look, unashamedly, we are not a greenfield early stage exploration company. We're not. We're here. We see the value in taking projects into production, generating cash flow, stopping dilution to shareholders by having to raise money to fund another drill program. We want to get projects into production. So when we choose these projects, in our minds, we're already 90% there in terms of, yes, this can get into production. But all the work we then do is to demonstrate that. So the brownfields projects you see here in South Africa, up in East Africa, they've largely been de-risked because of all the capital and all the work which has been done in done beforehand. We get there, we introduce capital, we introduce the skill set, which those projects have lacked for several years, whether it's the mining skills, financing skills, and so on. But we are able to bring that and get these projects even a lot quicker than perhaps other teams could do here.
Okay. What's your thoughts on Indaba as the last question?
Yeah, it's busy, huh? No, it's been a crazy few days, and we're only on Tuesday. You know, we've got another couple of days to go. There's a lot happening. I think it's one of the biggest ones for several years, which is great to see. There's money around. No question about it. What I like is the strong presence of government. Yeah, there's been some very big delegations from Tanzania, from Zambia, other jurisdictions here in Africa, and they're here to attract finance, to attract investment. You know, I think what we're seeing now is government really wanting significant money to come into their support of the mining industry. And it's good to see.
Indeed. Good luck, and we look forward to following the stories of all of these companies as we go through the year and next year.
Thanks a lot. Lots to come.
Okay, I mean, so what do you make of those companies? I mean, they're obviously, you know, potentially unicorn. Obviously, we've talked about unicorn in the past when they came to market around about 18 months, 2 years ago now, obviously focused heavily in Ireland on the zinc plays, but there's potential maybe for them to branch out into the African continent, right?
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any sort of, anybody's hiding that Jason's come on board to bring African assets to these companies. You know, both Shuka and Unicorn are both appointed Jason for one reason only, and that is to bring African assets. What African assets, we don't know, but I think all will be revealed in the next few weeks, basically, that there's stuff on the go, and he's running around. He was telling me he was running around like literally a headless chicken. He actually said to me that to get to me so that he'd do the interview, he had to ride on the back of a motorbike because he couldn't get a taxi. Because the traffic was also gridlocked as well. So things are happening. Both of those are at like failure basement price levels, I think. You've got Marula, which he's turned into a revenue producing company within 12 months. From what he was saying, I fully expect he's going to try and do that again with the other two projects. And Neo is uranium play and looks actually very exciting. So all looking very interesting.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So then I think you had a good conversation with the Aterian guys as well, didn't you? Caught up with Charles Bray and Simon Rollison. Obviously, we talked to them just pre-mining Indaba when they were in Botswana. That was last week. And they were obviously having meetings down in Botswana where they've got these new lithium brine licenses and the copper in effectively the Kalahari copper belt there. So that looked and sounded exciting. It sounded like there was quite a lot of people who'd visited them on their booth at the Indaba conference there.
Yeah, the quality of that one wasn't so great, but hopefully you can put up with the quality. And that was because I'm a bit of an idiot. I left headphones on, I think. Well, I was recording it, so I apologize. But yeah, those guys have got, you know, that they are a very good team. See, not just Simon and Charles, but Kaza as well, and the guy from that we met in Rwanda as well is also down here as well. So I just see that they're going to progress. Who knows what's going to happen in Rwanda with the lithium? If it's there, now that's it, you know, turns into Rio want to go for this, then obviously, literally, all bets are off at the share price. And then you've got the opportunity that Morocco. I see the Morocco and the copper could be, you know, pretty damn sizable. And again, they've had many, many inquiries from what they've said about copper in Morocco. And I think the Botswana thing is, you know, being picked up for very little money. It was a guy who had the licenses himself, couldn't go ahead and process and deal with them himself. So they've brought him on board and taken the licenses with them for very little consideration, I think. And then subsequently, that should start to progress as well. So
yeah,
and as I keep bugging Charles with, effectively, he needs to get the trading arm sorted out, and he sort of promised me in the next few weeks that is going to be sorted, but he obviously can't tell me exactly how. But I think when that starts, you know, you then have got a package of stuff that's very very interesting and only worth about £8 million. It should be a sniff.
All right. Well. Let's have a listen to what Charles and Simon had to say.
So here I am at Indaba. We're in Terian's little corner of Indaba, and I have Simon Robinson, CEO. So tell us what it's been like for you here.
Hi, Kevin. Good to see you here. It's been very good. Certainly seems to be a lot of footfall and traffic compared to last year. We're getting a lot of interest in the Moroccan projects. People are coming to us because they met us last year, and I think, you know, the fact that we've done the Rio Tinto joint venture is a sort of tick in the box for us. And now, you know, we're making it clear what we're looking for in terms of the business model to take the Moroccan projects forward. And yeah, it's being well received. We look forward to see what the next couple of months produce.
Yeah, I would imagine people are taking you a lot more serious now that you're in a joint venture with Rio Tinto.
Oh, completely. You know, and that was part of the reason we like the Rio Tinto deal, because, you know, it's a big, well-known brand in the mining industry. And that, you know, when you enter into a joint venture with such an entity, you're being scrutinized, you're being checked, due diligence on the company is sound. And it's a positive sort of another positive tick in the boxes for us.
That's great. We look forward to hearing what the story is going to be in Morocco as it unfolds. And yeah, I think an interesting 2024 ahead for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to getting back on the ground and sort of getting the news and the results from Morocco, and see if we can get some corporate activity going this year as well.
Great. Thanks for your time, Sam. So yes, here I am again at Indaba with Charles Bray, the chairman of Eterian. Tell us how things are going, Charles.
It's a very exciting, busy show. So what we've seen is that while there's a larger number of participants this year, it seems that the drop-off in the lithium price has made it a little more, slightly more subdued. But overall, attendance is up. People are still looking to do deals. We're looking to do deals. And the reception so far has been great.
Good. So we can expect some news to come out of this, you think, over the next coming months?
Over the next coming months, yes, we definitely expect some news to come out. We have a lot of work to do in terms of follow-up, a lot of documents and NDAs to exchange, a lot of good relationships that we've made over the past 3-4 days that we need to follow up with. Hopefully, at least some of those will bear some fruit. Just excited at the prospect of meeting and working with a large number of these groups.
And what have been people's reaction to Rwanda and Morocco and I suppose Botswana?
Yeah.
Well, what's been their reaction?
Yeah, let's start with Rwanda. The reaction has been pretty remarkable. Lots of positive reaction with the tie-up with Rio Tinto. Lots of very positive tie-up reaction to the tie-up with Rio Tinto. Very positive reaction to our acquisition in Botswana, what we've seen from our visit, but also from the reaction in the marketplace here, is that there's good, strong approval from in particular the majors in terms of acquiring or picking up good, strong assets. And then last but definitely not least, it's been our focus over the past 3-4 days has been Morocco. And there we've learned quite a bit, made some important tie-ups, and definitely secured some very interesting data that we intend to use. And ideally, like I said earlier, we'll have some announcements to come on the back of our visit here.
Great. Again, thanks for your time. And let's hope some deals come from this and Eterian can move forward this year. I think you've got an exciting year ahead, especially as you're going to get the trading arm started. Charles?
Yes, looking forward to updating the market on that.
Yes, I am as well. Good luck.
So you also caught up with Colin Bird, and I believe Martin Churchhouse was with him. Do you want to just talk us through what you're finding? Because I think you had a good long chat with him, didn't you, about the sort of markets and about Zambia and copper and all the various different assets and the different companies. And obviously Martin being on board with Kendrick Resources. How were they? Were they upbeat?
Very, is all I would say. These Zambian assets are not just a bit of ground. You know, if you look at the maps that have been put in many of the social media groups, if you want to have a look, but the maps of where, you know, you've got African Pioneers basically licenses with First Quantum. And you've also got the licenses of Galileo, which is on the border of Angola, where Ivanhoe was basically taking the whole other side of Angola or the border. And that's actually touching Galileo's license. And then you've got Extract as well, which have got incredibly prospective licenses. You know, so I think they don't want to be too optimistic, because if it's as good as all of these majors that are in the area think it is, and they're spending literally millions and millions and millions of dollars, then the effect on the share prices of those three companies could be dramatic, to say the least. You know, and I don't want to even guess what could happen. But if a fine of the copper comes in the next few months, which is what is likely, then all of those real estate values, if you like, are just going to go through the roof. And I suppose that's without the other things that they've got as well. You know, African Pioneer has got the project on Gombo in Namibia. And you've got Galileo, who's also got multitudes of projects. And Extract also with the potential sale of the gold asset in Mozambique, Manica. So they're in a very, very strong position. But from a share price and share value point of view, they're off.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I don't know if you saw, there was an RNS in the week, wasn't there, on the African Pioneer with the Ongombo, basically to help how much they're advancing the copper gold project. And I think they said that the renewal of the exclusive prospecting license, EPL 5772, and they're also moving forward with the environmental and social impact assessment. They've also done some X-ray transmission, XRT ore sorting, and they've shown positive outcomes for the material processing. So it all looks pretty good there. They've an updated mineral resource estimate, significant potential with 5.7 million tons at 1.1% copper. So it's not a small small asset that, and they're trying to explore additional resource potential within the project area. So it was a good update, I thought, and I think it did zero to move the dial on the SP on the day. So that was, situation normal, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, the other one that really sparked my interest, probably because it's obviously completely unloved, and the market cap is now like £1.3 million, which, don't forget, this is a main market listed company. How much is the shell of Kendrick worth? Never mind the fact that it has actually pretty damn decent assets on.
Yeah. You've got to have something like 30 million valuation these days to list on the market now, plus reserves of cash runway for probably 12 months, which is probably what, a couple of million quid or something in real terms these days to run a company.
Yeah. So if that was even RTO'd, it would be worth two or three times the price, you would imagine. But anyway, that aside, because that's obviously not going to happen, is, you know, the assets they've got. It was very interesting. And, have a listen to what Martin has to say.
Yeah.
There was an RNS out during the week as well.
Yeah.
And, you told
targets, when the new nickel targets at Storm Era, which look really good.
Yeah, and he also, he did say to me that there is more information about amounts as well. Mark, they're just waiting to finalize details and stuff. So, didn't tell me what, but you know, watch out, because there's going to be a few RNSs I think coming out for Kendrick Resources, and really it's a silly valuation. No.
Yeah, so let's have a listen to what Martin and Colin had to say about the various companies, shall we?
We're coming here from Camps Bay in beautiful South Africa. I'm here with Colin Bird at Martin Churchhouse, and Colin's going to give us a bit of a view of what he thinks is going on with the market in general. And then we're going to get some more technical stuff from Martin, from the various companies that they're involved with.
Thank you, Kevin. Nice to see you again. Yeah, it's a very well attended in Darba. The mood is quite upbeat. And of course, it always is, because this industry, I think by definition, you have to be an optimist. But I think the real upbeat is here this time. You know, we've waited a long, long time. We don't always correspond and connect with the progress in the big markets. Fundamentals out there are beginning to swing our way, so not to believe my own optimism. I really do think things are changing. But back to our companies, we had a difficult 3 years, but I think we've had more drilling programs and we've had more action than I've ever had in my entire career. And I'm happy to say that Martin joining the team and other technical people have allowed us to add seniority emerging youngsters who really are dying to get going, which Martin has brought into the company, both seasoned, mature, and new MSc graduates, all add into the mix. So we're excited just about all our companies. All of them are they're at different stages. They've got different missions, but there's a common theme really, and the common theme is new age metals, battery materials, and that's the common theme. And maybe Kevin and Martin will go through the various projects, Kevin, saying what progress we've made, what we're excited about. We're not very miserable about anything, but we really have, in most of the companies, made real progress, which should turn into enhancement of shareholder value over the coming 18 months. That's what we're paid to do, and that's what we're trying to do.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about Extract Resources. Again, more licenses in northwest Zambia, and obviously quite a few other assets, but I'll leave Colin to explain it to you.
Thanks, Kevin. As you know, there's a vote on the 13th of February where we, on our decision, which we're requesting shareholders to support us, that we convert our variable earnings into fixed earnings for a period, which results in an inflow of money into the company of some 18.36 million, of which we've received about 2.5, and the shareholders will vote on the 13th. We did say at the annual general meeting that we'd acquired very, very highly prospective assets, exploration assets, in the northwest of Zambia. And we're pursuing a small mines policy and campaign in Zambia where opportunities are numerous, mainly because people have built plants without ore bodies, and or vice versa, and or the ore body is too far from existing plants, but would do very well with upgrading. So many opportunities in that small mining sector, which since about 2006 have been abandoned. But I'll let Martin Churchyard tell you all about the strength and what we think is the strength, consider the strength of our exploration situation in Northwest, and a little bit about our small mines ambitions. So over to Martin.
Yeah, thank you, Colin. Yeah, we've talked on you know, in terms of other companies, we talked about the sort of the northwest of Zambia, but in Extract's case, we've got two highly prospective licenses. Again, you know, we're sitting in a position where we'll either benefit hopefully from the sort of fold and thrust bolt Kolwezi type mineralization, or the Western Foreland Kamoa style high grade mineralization. The licenses are well placed for both. In terms of our strategy and the way we're progressing, obviously we've got other related projects in African Pioneer and Galileo. So we're in a position where we've got a huge pool of data that we've accumulated. We also have a lot of historic geophysical information that we're now currently working with our external geophysical contractor to review and investigate in minute detail. And I'm sure that we'll generate a lot of useful information and targets out of that, which we will then use to plan our exploration strategy going forwards. The other thing, of course, is, you know, we are literally surrounded by Ivanhoe, Rio, Anglo, Cobalt, and the Anglo Arc Minerals relationship as well. And as a consequence, it's not really necessarily up to us to start drilling and looking for targets. I mean, we can actually do what we want to do and start generating these targets and preparing ourselves for work. And all that has to happen is one of these other companies around us, all of whom have got deep in pockets, of course, if any of those make a Kamoa-style discovery, then that will have a profound effect on our assets as well, because it will prove once and for all that we're very much in the right area. I personally have never seen anything like it in terms of the scramble for ground up in northwest Zambia right now. I mean, I think it is probably the hottest copper district on the planet, certainly at the moment.
We're going to have a discussion here about Kendrick Resources. Again, a lot of people don't seem to understand the possibilities of mining in this part of the world, in Scandinavia. Effectively, it is almost like
continuation of Russian resources in terms of that part of the world. I mean, geologically, I think Martin will tell us more, but I think it's very similar. And yeah, let's talk about the assets that you have in Kendrick and what's happening.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, we've got the focus, as you'd expect, is on battery metals. We've got vanadium, copper, and nickel projects in Norway, Sweden, and Finland. A couple of weeks ago, I went to, or was invited to, meet members of the Norwegian Parliament who are working on a program now looking at sort of strategic minerals in the region. They've suddenly realized that, you know, if you take nickel, for example, they've suddenly realized that more than 50% of all nickel production is, or nickel mining is done in three countries worldwide, and more than 50% of all refining of nickel is also done in only three countries. And they've recognized the strategic significance, particularly of these battery metals. And it obviously helps, and it's focused their attention because they've got what they call the battery coast. And there's a significant sort of growing battery research and fabrication industry that's sort of developing in the country. So if we start first of all with our nickel projects, we've got Espedalen in Norway. We've got a JORC compliant resource there in excess of 1 million tons at just over 1% nickel and about 0.6 copper. We've recently announced that we've got some excellent geophysical results, which has given us another extension of about 500 meters, which needs to be drilled at some point. But more interestingly, we've also intersected at depth another geophysical nickel target, which may be the roots of the whole complex, which is exciting. I think traditionally, you know, we've talked about the individual projects, but I think what we need to do with Espedalen is just recognize the fact that it is a nickel complex. We've got multiple targets there, some of which have got, you know, more than 6 million tons of resource, albeit relatively low grade. And then obviously we've got Espedalen with the Stormyra project, which we've just mentioned. But we've also got another 10 targets of merit, each of which have been drilled and have got mineralized intercepts of at least 1% copper over a number of meters. And as a result, you know, potentially we're sitting on something quite substantial there. If you go across the border, recently we acquired two new assets in Sweden, Nuptraskliden and Morvatnet. We acquired those from our colleagues at EMX. Very, very interesting projects. Again, we've got in-house resources that are not JORC compliant currently, but at Nuptraskliden, we've got an additional 17 kilometers of strike still to be looked at. And that is strike based on boulders and mineralized boulders and other analyses and things, geochemistry. So that's looking very, very interesting. And then at Mervatnet, we've also got another 6 or 7 kilometers of strike, which we need to test. We're located, both those projects are located close to an existing well-known battery producer. And one of the things that we're looking at now is how we establish a relationship with fellow Scandinavian battery producers directly. I think that's where the real value add is going to be going forwards. You know, it's one thing for us to build resources and define them and come up with a mineral resource and then look at the best way to mine them. But ultimately, the real value is going to be, and the risk mitigation is, if we are able to establish a long-term relationship and an end user for the products that we're looking to produce. We've spoken to you before about our vanadium projects in both Finland and Sweden. We were a little disappointed that the whole redox, vanadium redox battery storage initiative didn't really take off in the way that we'd sort of hoped. However, when we just come back in from this recent meeting in Norway, it's obvious that there's a lot of work going on in the background now, looking at research and people looking at the economics of actually developing businesses now to produce these battery storage units with the sort of vanadium redox technology. Ariake, we've recently announced some very interesting drill results. What we're finding is that we've actually got two vanadium resources. So we've got a low-grade and then we've got a high-grade resource. The high-grade resource, based on our research, suggests that it is amongst the highest grade, if not the highest grade, vanadium once concentrated up of any of the other projects that we can see regionally. And I think that will have a role to play at some point in the future, with low-grade resources wanting to beneficiate with a high-grade product. And at the moment, we've decided to stop further drilling. You know, we could keep drilling and keep drilling and add to the resource. We're confident of that. We've got another four licenses along strike, which we own, where we've got geochemistry and other historic work. And we've also got geophysical data that clearly shows us that we've got very similar geophysical signatures to that which has provided the vanadium to date. But rather than continue to add to that resource, what we're doing now, in a similar fashion to the nickel, is we're now looking to try and establish relationships with potential end users and build on that, a pathway, so that we're in a position where we are starting to look at developing these vanadium resources with an end user in mind.
That's great. Thanks, Barton. So we're moving on now to Bezant Resources. And again, I'll ask Martin just to give us an overview of Bezant and the assets that it has.
The three principal assets that are sitting in Bezant at the moment. The first is the Mangkayan project in the Philippines. That is one that's now in feasibility. The company owns just over 23% of that project. There's nothing that we need to do at this stage, but we're watching with interest to see how the feasibility develops. We've got the Kanye manganese project in Botswana. We've got an in-house resource based on the first round of drilling that we completed. We're now in a position where we're looking to see what work we need to do to test the balance of the strike length of the target. And once we've got that, we'll be in a position to then decide whether this is a project that we're going to be looked to develop ourselves, or we start talking to some of our neighbors who are more advanced than us. The main project that we have in Bezant in terms of development potential is the Hope and Gorum project in Namibia. It's a copper gold project. We recently announced our updated mineral resource estimate. With regard to the Hope and Gorum project, everybody will know that we have submitted our mining license application, waiting for that to be concluded. We are in regular dialogue with the ministry. Everything seems to be in order. We're not receiving any negativity in that respect. What we do have is the environmental social impact assessment and the environmental management plan, all 250 pages of it, which has now been handed to interested and affected parties. And then we'll be in a position where we can get that signed off. The ministry has effectively asked us to provide the ESIA and the EMP, at which point it'll be in a position where it can sign off on the mining license. So we're looking in pretty good shape there. We haven't been wasting our time in the background. We have been talking to the providers of most of the heavy plant and equipment. We've been talking to providers of the proposed renewable energy source that we'll be using. Likewise, crushing plants and other ancillary equipment, and also talking to various consultants about sort of final mine design, pit shell design, and other things. So the plan is, you know, there's a lot of paddling going on under the water to make sure that once that license is granted, that we are effectively well ahead of the game, and that we're in a position to then start talking to the providers of the ore sorter and some of the other major components that will constitute the plant, and start putting orders in for them.
Okay, so let's just talk about Galileo. Obviously, cashed up company. The Aframat shares are going to, or Aframat cash is going to be coming in the next couple of months, and has a multitude of projects, to be brutally honest with you. So try and concisely give us a give us an idea of what's been going on in Galileo and what you expect to be going on in the next 12 months. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, you're right. There are a significant number of high-quality projects sitting in Galileo. And whilst that AFRINET money is coming in, we're very conscious of the fact that we need to make sure that, you know, we use that war chest wisely. And as a result, you know, we're not sort of diving into any particular project without sort of, you know, giving it some very serious sort of review and consideration first. I mean, a case in point, we've got the Shinganda project, which is in sort of west central Zambia, just above Kafue. You would have seen some of the RNSs that we've put out with. We think potentially it might be an IOCG, but, you know, we're sort of sitting on the fence at the moment. The geology is very, very interesting, exciting. Yeah, we've got 300 meter thick packages of mineralized breccias, albeit low grade mineralization at this size at this time, but with, you know, mineralized runs in there. And then, you know, on the eastern side of the license, we've got at surface 33 gram per ton gold grades, and we're trying to get it all sort of fit together at the moment. So we've stopped the drilling, and we're essentially now taking all of the historic data that we've got, all of the drill holes and things, and we're starting to put together 3D models, because ultimately what we think we will find at Shinganda somewhere is some supergene enriched mineralization, hopefully a substantial amount, and that's really what we want, that high grade. The first round of drilling that we did there intersected, you know, a couple of nice holes, both of over 1% intercepts, relatively close to surface, over 50 and 40 meters respectively. So we want a lot more of that. So before we start plugging holes in anywhere else in Shinganda, we just want to step back and have a complete review with the whole team, just to see where we should go next and formulate a proper strategy. We have Luansobi on the other side of the country. We've got a resource there. We're in a position where we have an open pit strike underground operation with a life of mine probably in the region of sort of 8 to 10 years at this stage. But where it gets exciting at Luansobi is that potentially, you know, we're about 9 kilometers away from Mufulira, and there were historically a couple of deep holes drilled which intersected mineralization at depth. And that is effectively untested, and we don't know what's down there, but that could be something quite substantial potentially. But we're going to have to go and have a look for it. We're in a situation now where we're being made offers on a regular basis now from people that want to either joint venture Luansobi or come up with some other scheme of arrangement to be involved. And we're assessing all of those opportunities and options that have been presented to us. And then we'll ultimately decide whether what we do is we separate the near-surface shallow mineralization, those 8 to 10 year open pit and underground operation, from the deep level, or whether we combine them. So we're working on that, and we'll come up with a plan of action, and then we'll implement it. So that's looking very interesting. We've obviously got a license up in northwest Zambia in the very exciting area, which is, you know, everybody seems to be up there at the moment trying to acquire ground. It's in the, hopefully, the Western Foreland, in that right sort of architecture and structure. So we will be developing that. We're in a fortunate position, of course, where some of the affiliated companies, African Pioneer and Extract, have also got licenses up there, so there's an opportunity for the team to share data and their understanding of where they think we are in the lithology and the geological sequence, and hopefully that will actually enhance our sort of exploration efforts. And finally, in Galileo, we've got our two projects in Zimbabwe. We've got the Kamativi Lithium Project, 500 square kilometer license, which is surrounded by, on two sides, by the old Kamativi mine. That's progressing well. Shareholders will recall that our initial drill program, one of the first holes we drilled, made a decent 1% lithium intercept. Since then, we've done a substantial amount of work on this license. It's a very big area to cover. And again, we've gone back to basics here, and it's all about shoe leather and walking the license, getting as much information as we possibly can, and then trenching and sampling to ensure that we're not missing anything. There are lots of pegmatite swarms and things on the license, and not all of them are mineralized. So it's a case of basically sort of finding the wood from the trees. We've got a good team out on the ground, and they're doing that right now. We've also got the Bulawayo gold license, and we've got a number of targets that are approaching being drill ready. We still need to prioritize those and assess which ones we want to have a look at in more detail. Obviously, the nature of the mineralization that you've got, particularly around the sort of Queens Mine area, is that you can lose focus and start chasing after high-grade narrow veins, which is not the business that we're in. We could be there forever trying to build enough resource to put something together. What we're focusing on are those areas where we've got potential bulk tonnage targets. We've got two or three that we've now identified, and it's now just a case of us deciding which one of those we want to prioritize, and then we'll start to put some fences of probably reverse circulation drill holes into those just to see what it looks like, and then we'll go from there. We've also got some nickel potential in that Bulawayo license, but that's sort of taking a back seat at the moment whilst you focus on the gold targets.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say you're not going to run out of things to do in Galileo. Okay, we'll move on to African Pioneer. Happy to say it's one of our picks of this year, and also one of my favourites, I have to say, with the licences in northwest Zambia, with JVs with First Quantum. I think it's also important to say First Quantum already own 15% of African Pioneer, and also you've got Ombombo in Namibia, which, I'll let Martin explain, but I think, you know, that's the revenue driver that could well be within African Pioneer as well.
Thanks, Kevin. If you start with northwest Zambia, we've got the suite of licenses up there, as you say, which are in joint venture with First Quantum, and they've been doing a considerable amount of work, a lot of geophysics, quite a lot of drilling. Here that we have got two styles of mineralization. Up there we've got the sort of fold and thrust belt with the sort of Kolwezi style near surface mineralization, and we've certainly, with our drilling, we've picked up the right lithologies and the right sequence for the Kamoa style mineralization. They've spent, I think it's over $500,000, which was the first benchmark that had to be met, and I think they're well on the way to meeting the next target in terms of their sort of required spend in order to earn in. You know, it's we've talked about it with some of the other affiliated companies. It's a very, very exciting part of the world to be operating in at the moment. Not something that I've ever experienced before, not to this level anyway. The amount of excitement and interest that's being shown in that northwestern part of Zambia. So it's going to be fascinating to see how things pan out there. The Ombombo project in Namibia, that is on the matchless belt, the same belt as Hope and Gorah project, which some people will know is in Bazant. Very nice, clean, produces a very nice, clean copper gold concentrate. We updated the resource last year to 30 million tons, just over a percent copper and a gold credit as well. We are looking at doing some additional drilling on Ombombo purely for the purpose of proving up some additional sort of copper equivalent value, because the historic drilling that was done predating our acquisition of the license was assay for copper, but no gold was assay, and that's anywhere between sort of 0.2 and 0.4 grams per ton, with I think peak grades of up to about 9 grams. You know, if we can get another 0.3 of gold add to the sort of copper equivalent grade, then that will make quite a difference. It also would probably have a profound effect on the total tons that we'd actually have, because that mineralization, or the area where there is no gold assays at the moment, happens to be in the chutes that are much wider, much thicker. So it would obviously be easier mining, and we'd be pulling more tons. We've got a mining license already for Ombombo. All we're doing now is finishing the environmental impact study and the environmental management plan. That is about 85% complete. And as soon as that is done and has been approved, then we're good to go. The test work has been done. We'll almost certainly be looking at pre-concentration to produce a high-grade concentrate. We think potentially, because it's such a nice clean ore and is so well-defined, that we may well find that the pre-concentrate grade will be higher than that which we think we'll get for Hope and Gorup, which will be interesting. We're talking to various parties at the moment, what we do with that pre-concentrate, and we've got a number of options available to us. There is a small open pit, which we would start with, and then interestingly, because the ore body is relatively shallow and it is it's got a dip of about 15 degrees and a plunge of about 7 degrees, the location of the potential open pit, which will be a long skinny pit, means that it gives us an opportunity to put in multiple drives to access the mineralization. You know, it gives us more faces, more production. So it's really looking very interesting now. It was always sort of orphaned historically because, you know, people just couldn't see how they could actually develop it. But I'm confident that we've now found a way of processing the mineralization, producing an upgraded resource that we can then find a home for to produce the final concentrate. So that's moving along very nicely.
Very good. Yeah, I mean, I think we've said it before, but if any of these majors find any sort of evidence of the different systems in the northwest Zambia, then I think all bets are off. I think everybody's going to be scrambling for these shares. So, and I don't just mean in African Pioneer, I mean across the board. So, you know, I would suggest that you seriously contemplate taking a position in these things now, because if it goes, it will go, I'm pretty sure. As Martin has said, I think you have the backstop of what's in Namibia, which more than compensates for the current market capitalization of this company, in my view. But again, only my opinion. Okay, so now we move on to the final one, which is Extract Resources. Obviously, there's been a opportunity for turning the income stream into a pretty much guaranteed income stream in terms of the potential sale of the asset in Mozambique, which obviously the shareholders are going to have to vote for on the 13th of February, I believe it is. But more importantly, I'd like Martin just to give us an overview of all the different assets. Obviously, it's a similar situation with the land parcels in northwest Zambia. I'll leave it him to explain, and all the other assets.
Thank you. Yeah, it's you're right. I mean, we've got two highly prospective licenses up in northwest Zambia. There, one of them, 28001, is running along the border between Zambia and Angola, and as of November last year, Ivanhoe acquired a license that stretches across the two provinces on that western side of the border there, covering an area that is reported to be sort of the size of Switzerland. So if you take the fact that we've got Ivanhoe to our west, contiguous with our license, and then the rest of the ground is well, those licenses are then surrounded by Rio Tinto, Cobalt, Anglo-American, First Quantum. We're an exalted company, and of course we've got licenses in the other affiliated companies as well. So we are well placed, and we're in a very hot part of the world as far as copper is concerned at the moment. As I've mentioned previously, we've got the added advantage of the other affiliated companies with the licenses there. We can pool and share information. We've got a wealth of historical geophysical data which we've acquired, and this was produced by various senior companies. We now own this information, and we're giving it to our external geophysical consultant, the same one that came up with all these fantastic targets that we have in Galileo's Shinganda project, and we will no doubt generate projects of merit. I think the key thing for us, of course, is that we're not in any great hurry to start drilling these assets now, because at some point in time, our neighbors are going to start drilling, and if any of those intersect Comoa style mineralization, then it's a whole different ball game. So we'll take our time. We'll get hold of all the historic data that we've got. We'll look at what we've found on other neighboring licenses and things. We'll put together as much of the architecture and the sort of the regional structure and lithology as we can, and then choose our targets carefully and go from there.
Yeah, and as was said before, with these licenses, with all of these majors in this area, do we think there's copper there? Otherwise, I'm not sure how many millions of dollars must be being plowed into the ground at this moment in time in this particular postcode, if you like, which is a huge postcode, obviously, but it must be a huge amount of money anyway. I don't think they're there because there's maybe copper about. I think they're there because there probably is copper about. And as we've already said, Extract is going to have the cash on hand. Obviously, assuming the shareholders okay the vote on the 13th of February to fund itself, Galileo is in a good position. African Pioneer is being carried by First Quantum. So there's a whole suite of opportunities there, depending on which one you look at, to be playing the theme of copper in Zambia, which seems to be a big theme that's going on, partly government driven and partly because it's there. I think it's the reality of the situation. So again, thanks for your time, Martin, and we look forward to speaking to you in a bit more detail, I think, about Kendrick Resources as we're going along. And enjoy the sunshine.
Okay, well, I mean, the other thing that came out in the week was the RNS from Jubilee Metals, wasn't it? We talked to Leon yesterday about that, and obviously with them making progress at the copper operations in Zambia, where they aim to achieve an initial production goal of 25,000 tons, and again, that's the word there being the initial production, because obviously they're talking about shipping their solution, their modular solution, to expand it up to 50,000 tons for the Rowan facility there. So they had some great results there, partnerships as well, and the waste rock project obviously announced with IRH from Abu Dhabi, who I believe you bumped into some of the guys at the conference, which you can talk about in a minute, and also the acquisition option for the Moncoya project, which highlight Jubilee's commitment to unlock overlooked copper resources. So all looking very, very good for Jubilee 24, 25, 26 onwards, really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I met one of the guys from IRH on one of the stands. He was actually on the Aterian stand. He was asking them about the copper in Morocco, Shokora. So, those guys are searching out copper. You know, they want to look at the small projects, or not so small, some of them may be big, and find out what's actually happening. So, but it was very interesting to talk to different people. I also met the guy from Eura Holdings for the Emerald, the reopening of the Emerald mine down in South Africa. So that was a really nice chat we had with them. And I had to rush because of a Jubilee.
Was it Edward Nelson you met, chairman?
No, the CEO.
Ah, okay, that's Bernadotte Olivier.
Yeah, that's right, Bernard Olivier. And I also met the production manager guy, Vezel.
Yeah.
So, that was very interesting to have a look at what they're trying to do. And I mean, they are very near-term production as well. You know, it's coming in the next few weeks, if not months. So hopefully we'll catch up with him at some point in the future as well, because it was definitely a very interesting chat with them. Been trying to get hold of Fire Institute Minerals. Been trying to get hold of them, couldn't manage to get them. I did see the stand that they had today when I was in Andaba. Again, very, very interesting proposition there. I mean, I'm extremely keen about their proposition, the takeover of the Glencore facility for the lime there in Zambia.
Yeah, it looks good. I was going to ask you, so when, obviously you've talked about IRH as an investment vehicle, but are any of the majors there, you're going to expect the Rio Tintos, the Glencores of this world, the big First Quantums, are you seeing much presence from those guys?
They're all there. There isn't one of them that's not there. They have massive stance. And the one thing that I think is more apparent this year than was last year when we came is that the countries themselves are big presence.
you know, Zambia's down here, and the president of Zambia came, and the mining president of Zambia came, and the Congo guys are here as well, and Zimbabwe, and South Africa, you know, all of the main African countries, especially sort of middle and southern Africa, seem to be representing themselves as countries because they see it as a real way for them to produce money. I also had a chat with Joel Cheatham, who's project manager for Tertiary Minerals, again another one in northwest Zambia, and he gave me the details of Patrick Cheatham, who I think is either CEO or chairman, I'm not sure which. So yeah, we'll maybe try and touch base with those guys as well when we get around to it. But yeah, it's been very interesting. I might go again to Indaba on the last day, but it closes at 12 o'clock, so I'm not sure where I'll be making it. But so yeah, it's been interesting, met lots of good people. We had a beautiful barbecue last night, looking over Hout Bay, which was just amazing. And they cooked ostrich and lamb, and it was really quite breathtaking, and the food was amazing. So I think I had a meat hangover the next day. It's like I'd eaten that much
meat hangover,
but it was very nice. That was from one of the companies that that does sort of drilling services and processing services that Aterian had used, and they really helped them, I think, in the comptoir in Rwanda, helped them process the thing properly, so they've now got it sorted out. So yeah, it's been very entertaining. I haven't really been back to my hotel other than just to sleep the last couple of days, so I'm out tonight for another meal with a few other CEOs as well. So yeah,
excellent. Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap things up. We've heard from various companies and CEOs. It's been an interesting listen, so I'll speak to you soon, and I'll have a safe journey back.
Indeed, thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.